really exciting new work, new research coming out within the NRLM research agenda, focusing specifically on the question of women's empowerment. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Thank you, Sebastian, and it's an honor to be on this panel along with everybody else, and thanks to all the participants for joining us for this webinar. Sebastian said, you know, we have this overall evaluation of NRLM, and then we are doing a number of specific papers on specific themes, and so I'm going to be really specific in my comments compared to the panelists who went before me, and focus on a paper that we've just finished. The paper is entitled, The Policies That Empower Women. And so the focus again within that is just specifically on policies and specifically on women's bargaining power, which is just one component of all that we're talking about. I'm going to be even more specific for this talk, and I'll frame my comments in the context of a marriage, but things apply equally to the workplace and other institutions that women are involved in. So to start off, we can think of women entering a marriage with an initial amount of bargaining power, reflecting, as Catherine has noted, her initial resources, her education, but also existing policies, social norms, and laws. So the question we ask in this paper is, can we improve this initial level through policies and through new institutions? And the answer is, it depends on how those policies impact the dependence of wives and husbands on the marriage for their well-being. So this is a specific definition of dependency that I'm using. It's the difference between each person's welfare within the marriage and their welfare levels if they were not married to each other. That is their standalone or autarkic levels of welfare. It's worth emphasizing that the standalone level is very well understood, even if divorce is never a possibility. All of us who are married and our spouses generally have a very clear idea of how dependent we are on each other for our well-being. And that is really the concept that we're using over here. In using that framework, it suggests the importance of a specific threshold. For any given policy, that threshold is a level of benefits that will make men and women equally dependent on each other. A woman's initial bargaining power will then only improve with policies that provide resources sufficient to meet or cross this threshold. So this is actually a significant point. It says that small changes that still leave women more dependent on the marriage than a man will not change her bargaining power. This is the main point I want to convey. Small incremental changes will have no impact unless they accumulate over long periods of time. Big changes are required, particularly if women are significantly disadvantaged. This means large improvements in her resources, changes in laws that really move the needle, large social movements like the Me Too movement. I want to make two additional points. The first is the difference that I'm emphasizing in this talk, the difference between women's welfare and her bargaining power or agency. We all know and we've seen the tremendous improvement that women have made. It's reflected in their levels of education. They're healthier, they live longer, maternal mortality has dropped significantly. But women still lack agency within the household and their workplaces. And that's the difference between women's welfare and her bargaining power. Once we accept that, there's a corollary. Policies that improve women's welfare without reducing her dependence on her husband may have little impact on her bargaining power. So if you take SAGs and a loan from an SAG, for example, the woman gets the loan, but if she is only able to repay it with income that her husband earns, it may do nothing for her bargaining power. Our research on women's empowerment in this paper supports this framework. We find an insignificant improvement in an index of women's decision-making ability in SAGs, in which loans are given only out of the internal savings of SAG members. These are small loans, and this is the finding that Bidisha referred to earlier. But NRLM also provides a large cash infusion to SAGs in the form of a community investment fund. And states were free to decide how much to extend to each SAG. Some states provided a very large amount, 1 lakh rupees or 1 million rupees, while others provided just 30,000 rupees. That means some SAGs were able to double the size of the loans, but in other SAGs, the loan increased eightfold. in those states in which it increased the most, in these high CIF states, we find large improvements in women's decision-making power, but not in others. That just reinforcing the conclusion of these my comments, it's not just the policy that matters, it's the magnitude of the benefits that the policy confers.